It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You've got this tug of war going on between the government and the Bank of England. That doesn't lead to a stable situation.
We are in a particular perilous moment because of decisions that were taken by Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng.
We will get through this storm and we will deliver the strong and sustained growth that can transform the prosperity of our country for generations to come.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Stephen Carroll. Today, Trussonomics in tatters. The Chancellor scraps almost all the measures announced in the mini-budget in a bid to calm the market firestorm. We'll bring you the details and instant analysis on the implications for markets and the broader economy. Plus, where does Liz Truss go from here? We'll hear from the head of the polling agency Ipsos, and Caroline Hepker will bring us some of her interview with London's Mayor Sadiq Khan, including reaction to Jeremy Hunt's statement. Well, it wasn't so much of a U-turn, but completely wiping out the Prime Minister's economic platform. In a statement this morning, Jeremy Hunt reversed almost all of the tax cuts announced by his predecessor on September 23rd. On top of that, the energy support package, which limited the price per unit being paid by households, has now been limited until April of next year. Let's take a listen to Jeremy Hunt speaking a short time ago.
Good morning. A central responsibility for any government is to do what's necessary for economic stability. This is vital for businesses making long-term investment decisions and for families concerned about their jobs, their mortgages, and the cost of living. No government can control markets, but every government can give certainty about the sustainability of public finances. And that is one of the many factors that influence how markets behave. And for that reason, although the Prime Minister and I are both committed to cutting corporation tax, on Friday she listened to concerns about the mini-budget and confirmed we will not proceed with the cut to corporation tax announced. The government has today decided to make further changes to the mini-budget and to reduce unhelpful speculation about what they are. We've decided to announce these ahead of the medium-term fiscal plan, which happens in 2 weeks. I'll give a detailed statement to Parliament this afternoon and answer questions from MPs. But because these decisions are market sensitive, I've agreed with the Speaker the need to give an early, brief summary of the changes, which are all designed to provide confidence and stability. Firstly, we will reverse almost all the tax measures announced in the growth plan 3 weeks ago that have not started parliamentary legislation. So whilst we will continue with the abolition of the health and social care levy and stamp duty changes, we will no longer be proceeding with the cuts to dividend tax rates, the reversal of off-payroll working reforms introduced in 2017 and 2021, the new VAT-free shopping scheme for non-UK visitors, or the freeze on alcohol duty rates. Secondly, the government's current plan is to cut the basic rate of income tax to 19% from April 2023. It is a deeply held conservative value, a value that I share, that people should keep more of the money they earn. But at a time when markets are rightly demanding commitment to sustainable public finances, it is not right to borrow to fund this tax cut. So I've decided that the basic rate of income tax will remain at 20%, and it will do so indefinitely until economic circumstances allow for it to be cut. Taken together with the decision not to cut corporation tax and restoring the top rate of income tax, the measures I've announced today will raise every year around £32 billion. Finally, the biggest single expense in the growth plan was the energy price guarantee. This is a landmark policy supporting millions of people through a difficult winter. And today I want to confirm that the support we are providing between now and April next year will not change. But beyond that, the Prime Minister and I have agreed it would not be responsible to continue exposing public finances to unlimited volatility in international gas prices. So I'm announcing today a Treasury-led review into how we support energy bills beyond April next year. The objective is to design a new approach that will cost the taxpayer significantly less than planned, whilst ensuring enough support for those in need. Any support for businesses will be targeted to those most affected, and the new approach will better incentivise energy efficiency. The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets, but they can play their part, and we will do so, because instability affects the prices of things in shops, the cost of mortgages, and the values of pensions. There will be more difficult decisions, I'm afraid, on both tax and spending as we deliver our commitment to get debt falling as a share of the economy over the medium term. All departments will need to redouble their efforts to find savings, and some areas of spending will need to be cut. But as I promised at the weekend, our priority in making the difficult decisions that lie ahead will always be the most vulnerable. And I remain extremely confident about the UK's long-term economic prospects as we deliver our mission to go for growth. But growth requires confidence and stability, and the United Kingdom will always pay its way. This government will therefore take whatever tough decisions are necessary to do so. Thank you.
That was the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt speaking a short time ago. Lots to unpack there. We have all of the experts you need to understand exactly what the Chancellor has just announced. Let's go first to Downing Street and live to our economics and government correspondent Lizzie Burden, who joins us now. Lizzie, this was a statement very clearly showing that Jeremy Hunt is in control now. Has he wrested that control from Liz Truss?
Well, do you know what's funny, Stephen? Earlier today at Downing Street, I saw a van of a shredding company arriving, and Liz Truss's economic policy has absolutely been shredded today. The mini budget is in tatters. There have been U-turns on almost all of her tax cuts, including the basic rate of income tax, alcohol, duty-free shopping. But the bigger humiliation really is the energy package. It's going to be reviewed from April. It's essentially going to be more targeted, more in line with what other European countries are doing, because it was very, very expensive. It is going to cost £60 billion for the first 6 months. And this is a huge humiliation for Liz Truss, because even through all of the backtracking on corporation tax, on the top rate of income tax, Liz Truss was taunting Labour that they weren't matching her on her energy bailout. So this is a huge win for Keir Starmer. Overall, the measures are expected to raise £32 billion a year. The Office for Budget Responsibility was projecting a medium-term fiscal hole of £70 billion. So it still leaves a £38 billion hole to get debt falling as a share of GDP in 3 years. But they have given the OBR plenty of warning here. It means they can change their forecasts, markets can adjust, and Hunt's going to hope that that fiscal hole will be smaller.
Lizzie, is there anything left of Trussonomics at this stage?
I think most of it is in the shredder, as I say. This really might save the Tories for now, but I don't know whether it's going to save Truss. What I'm hearing in Westminster from everybody I speak to is it's a question of when, not if, she's going to go, because this is essentially Rishi Sunak's economic plan. So many MPs in the Tory party are asking themselves today, why not just crown him Prime Minister? The alternative is Jeremy Hunt, because he's basically in the driving seat now. Perhaps Liz Truss has inadvertently hired her successor, but another leadership election would surely divide the party even more. Any sort of coronation would totally bypass the party membership. And then the issue is, whoever takes over from Truss would have a severely diluted mandate, which raises the pressure for a snap election. And if you look at the polls right now, it suggests that Labour would absolutely wipe out the Tories.
Yeah, Lizzie Burden in Downing Street, thank you very much. Interesting to see that a fourth Conservative MP has come out publicly and said that Liz Truss has to go. It's Angela Richardson, the MP for Guildford, telling Times Radio that the Prime Minister's position was no longer tenable. Liz Truss set to meet the One Nation Caucus at 6 o'clock this evening. That's the grouping of Tory MPs that pose her the highest risk. Then she'll host a dinner of her cabinet in Downing Street afterwards. There's still plenty of action where Lizzie is for the rest of the day. Let's look at the market reaction next, though. We've got our markets reporter Valerie Tytel in studio with us. Valerie, so we're just over an hour now since we heard from Jeremy Hunt. What has been the reaction so far? Have his announcements gone far enough?
Hey, Stephen. Yeah, so gilts actually opened very strong this morning, and a lot of the impact from what Jeremy Hunt said seemed like it was priced in even before we got the official announcement. So the highlight for me is now 10-year yields are trading south of 4% yields. Now, they still have come a long way since mid-August. They were trading around 2% mid-August, so it's still a 200 basis point move, a doubling in that yield from 2% to 4%. But I think the main surprise is what you mentioned, the reduction of the universal energy support until April 2023, down from a 2 full years. Mm-hmm. And this arguably, it won't necessarily impact gilt issuance this year, but that will be something that will impact gilt issuance in the subsequent years. So less debt in the future, less gilt supply, less pressure on yields to move higher in the market. But, you know, I think we'll all be keen to see if there's any updated gilt remit alongside the budget later in the month for some assurance on how the DMO plans to fund the issuance.
It's important to note as well that the Chancellor met with the Debt Management Office before issuing this statement. So it was very clear that all arms of the financial machinery in the UK were informed of these decisions before they were announced as well. I'm curious, Valerie, you were a bond trader for 10 years. What will be going through the minds of people on bond trading floors now?
Yeah, so the first thing is obviously the global impact of what's happened today. So today it's very clear that the gilt market is going to find some calm. Liquidity is going to return. It was nearly over 2 weeks we had a non-functioning gilt market, and even Treasury Secretary Yellen was worried about spillovers into treasuries. So we've completely eliminated that left tail, which is going to be great for global liquidity and bonds. Now the next step is going to be quickly moving to what this means for Bank of England tightening, right? So last week we heard from Hugh Pill saying a significant response will be required. We also heard from Bailey saying that my best guess is this is going to be inflationary and perhaps will require a stronger response later this month than we thought. So right now 100 basis points is priced in for a Bank of England hike at the end of this month. That is a huge hurdle for the Bank of England. They've only the max they've hiked so far in this cycle has been 50 basis points, and they've only done that twice. So if the Bank of England disappoints market pricing, we know that the likely release valve for that is a weakening in sterling. And we know, you know, post the mini budget, we had many, many calls for parity in sterling versus the dollar. So that narrative is still live, but we'll be, you know, anxious to hear any more guidance from the Bank of England. We don't have any speakers lined up for the next 2 days, but I wouldn't be surprised if we hear from Bailey or Hugh Pill in the next few days.
Okay, Valerie Tytel, thank you very much for taking us through the market reaction there.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
As well. We're going to look at the broader economic perspective in all of this now. We're joined by the economist and writer Duncan Weldon. He's the author of the book 200 Years of Muddling Through about the British economy, as well as the Value Added newsletter. Caroline Hepker is back with us in studio as well. Caroline, you have a big interview that you're going to bring us in a moment, but let's get to Duncan first. Duncan, what is your reaction to the announcements from the Chancellor today?
Well, I think what's basically happened is the mini budget has become a micro budget. This is a huge U-turn in fiscal policy. And where it leaves the British economy right now is with, you know, we've gone from very expansionary fiscal policy to quite tight fiscal policy at the same time as the Bank of England is raising interest rates, that the economy already seems to be slipping into recession. You know, the Chancellor obviously had to, you know, essentially go further to rebuild credibility. So fiscal policy has swung from too loose to possibly even too tight now.
Yeah, do you think, good morning, Duncan, do you think that this is going to be a sort of another round of austerity? I mean, the Chancellor did talk about there having to be cuts. This sort of throwing out of the lion's share of the mini budget will save £32 billion. But the problem is that the cost of borrowing has gone up so much in the meantime that fiscal hole's even bigger. Do we go back to austerity?
I think we do. And, you know, one reason the Chancellor has pre-announced these measures a couple of weeks before his statement is, you know, the Office of Budget Responsibility's forecasting is still ongoing. Anything he can say now to bring down gilt yields to get the markets pricing in fewer hikes from the Bank of England will, you know, affect those forecasts. You know, 1% off gilt yields takes government borrowing costs down by about £10 billion by the end of the forecast. But yeah, there is still a hole to be filled. You know, the likely way they will fill that is by trying to increase benefits by less than inflation, by cutting government capital spending. This is all in economic terms, quite high multiplier government spending, which, you know, adds to demand. So, you know, I think we're left looking at a long but quite shallow downturn without that bounce back afterwards.
How do you see this playing into the Bank of England's thinking then? You know, the markets are now pricing in a much lower peak for rates than they were before. Does this mean that essentially we've gotten some relief from the pressure that's been on the central bank?
Yeah, so if we, you know, on the morning of the mini budget, markets were expecting bank rate to peak at around 4.5% next summer. That got above 6% in the days immediately after the budget. That's now been coming back down again. You know, I think we're probably looking at a peak around 5%, which is going to be painful for firms. It's going to be very painful for anyone with a mortgage as their fixed rate deals reset. And, you know, we've got quite a lot of people looking to reset in the coming next two quarters towards the peak. But yes, it's not going to be quite as bad as it was looking just a week ago.
Okay, in terms of the historic perspective, I mean, you've written, you know, the book on British economic history, 200 years of muddling through, as you put it that way. I mean, we're speaking to guests this morning, like Ben Page from Ipsos, you know, you can hear the sound of people's jaws hitting the floor as, you know, Britain does such a terrible job. Liz Truss has sort of created this kind of self-inflicted wound. Historically, give us some perspective. Is it really that bad?
I mean, it is quite bad. You know, if I was to write the book again today, it would presumably be 200 years of muddling through and then one completely crazy month. You know, things seem to have speeded up. If we go back to that mini budget on the 23rd of September, that was the biggest set of tax cuts, £45 billion of annual tax cuts since 1972. And that's a really bad precedent for any chancellor. 1972, the chancellor was Anthony Barber. The economic outlook wasn't radically dissimilar to today. Inflation was uncomfortably high, even as the economy was slowing. Barber cut taxes in what he called a dash for growth. And then we got this very short-lived Barber boom, which just overheated the economy and then quickly became a bust. And that was the worry. But we seem to have jumped forward in the space of a weekend, really, from 1972 to 1976. That was the last time that extreme market pressure from both the gilt market and the FX markets forced such an abrupt U-turn in British fiscal policy. You know, it's been essentially 50 years since we've had to change fiscal policy in the face of market pressure.
Duncan, I'm curious, is, you know, we're seeing a lot of commentary over the weekend about the kind of Brexit resurfacing into this debate as well. That article in The Telegraph, a lot of people were sharing on social media, Project Fear was right all along. Do you think there's now a greater realisation of the damage that Brexit has done to the UK economy?
I mean, I think so. You know, the problem with Brexit is, you know, it's a cost to the economy. Putting new trade barriers on trade with your largest, richest and nearest trading partner is always going to incur a cost. But it was quite sort of a slow moving economic problem. You know, it's losing 3 or 4 percentage points of GDP over a decade and a half. So, you know, the government could, because it was slow moving, sort of, you know, essentially spin that Brexit wasn't the problem. You know, the difference now is when you suddenly get 2-year mortgage rates spiking in the matter of weeks to the highest they've been in 15 years, then that's a, you know, an economic reality the government couldn't ignore. You know, I think in the end, what Brexit, you know, what the impact of Brexit on this immediate crisis is, I think Brexit was part of a process which, you know, began this undermining of international investors' faith in British institutions and in the credibility of policymakers.
Question. If the Bank of England manages to get the inflation problem controlled and inflation nears the 2% target in, let's say, the coming 18 months, do you envision a reintroduction of these tax cut proposals?
I mean, I don't think the government's going to be able to do that, to be honest. I think, Hunt today did say, you know, he'd still like to cut one penny off the basic rate of income tax, but only when the circumstances allow. I don't think the public finances are going to be in a position to allow him to make that promise in the next couple of years, certainly not this side of an election. You know, I think the government is stuck with a higher tax burden than it is comfortable with. And, you know, the great irony here is Liz Truss said, you know, things had gone wrong under the previous 12 years of Conservative-led government. It was time to lower taxes. So she unveiled, her and her first chancellor, unveiled this package of tax cuts. They've now had to walk back almost all of those tax cuts, and they're probably not done yet, because higher borrowing costs presumably mean they're going to have to be looking at raising some different taxes next year.
Okay, Duncan Weldon, the economist, the author of the book 200 Years of Muddling Through and the Value Added Newsletter. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme today as we look to react to the Chancellor's statement. Caroline, you rushed in fresh from an interview with the Mayor of London, and you've been talking to her about this as well.
Yeah, flat shoes, all important in these weeks at the moment. Yeah, I just dashed over to New City Hall to speak to the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, and he had only just watched the 5 minutes of Jeremy Hunt. So it was his sort of instant reaction. And I asked him about the fact, so there was the cut to basic tax rate that's gone. Some areas of spending will have to be cut, according to the new Chancellor, but the energy support package remains in place. So I put all of that to Sadiq Khan. What does all of this mean for London, for policies in the capital? So he gave us the reaction to the U-turn on the tax policies by the Chancellor.
Well, I've been speaking to families across London for the last few weeks, and I'm afraid the damage is already done in relation to exacerbating the cost of living crisis. Labour's been calling for some time, rather than using borrowed money to reduce the bills of families, to have a windfall levy on the fossil fuel companies making a massive amount of profit. The problem is, as a consequence of the government's policy, people are facing bigger rent bills, bigger mortgage bills. Interest rates are going up, inflation is going up, and although the government's confirmed there'll be support, it's only for 6 months, not 2 years. And so it's another example of a promise made and a promise broken.
So that was the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, speaking to me just earlier this morning, just after we got the announcement from the Chancellor. So he was, talking up, obviously, the chances of Labour at the next election, of the Shadow Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, and the kind of, he didn't use the word incompetence, but the incompetence of, you know, the Conservative government, as he would see it, and the damage that it is going to do to the UK. He also talked to me about a lot of other subjects, though. The Metropolitan Police, rents shooting up in London, what's going to happen in terms of blackouts if, you know, City Hall's preparing for that this winter. But I'm going to bring all of that to you tomorrow.
OK, we'll have that on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe from 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Let's bring you next, though, to another conversation about the challenges facing Liz Truss. Four of her MPs have now come out publicly calling on her to quit, many more echoing that sentiment in private. Normally, a Tory leader has a year before they can be voted out, but those rules could be changed. A little earlier, Caroline and Tom McKenzie were speaking to Ben Page, the chief executive of the Ipsos polling agency. He didn't hold back in his assessment of Liz Truss.
The problem is that the Conservatives in a few short weeks have managed to completely smash their any credibility for economic competence, which is quite impressive, really. And so Jeremy Hunt's personal profile is relatively low. We'll see after he's been doing this job for a week or two. Maybe he won't. I don't know how long he'll be doing it for, how it comes across. And we'll see, of course, what announcements he makes today. But certainly the key point is how the Conservatives very quickly, more quickly than I think we've ever seen a party do this, have managed to just implode. We've never seen a leader like Liz Truss fall as rapidly as she has managed to achieve in public estimation. It's quite impressive.
So that is the, well, impressive is one word to use, isn't it? But that's the historical context and just how stark this is that this has not been seen.
Yes, I mean, most new prime ministers get the benefit of the doubt and they sometimes have a honeymoon period. In Liz Truss's case, she's gone straight to the floor and she now has the lowest percentage Ipsos has ever measured since the 1970s when we started for satisfaction with a prime minister. And to achieve that within less than a month of taking office is quite impressive.
Wow. Briefly, Ben, before I let you go on the polling question, where do the polls stand more broadly for the Conservatives?
Well, you've got Labour on around 50% of the vote. The Conservatives are at bedrock somewhere in the mid-20s. Remember, in British politics, the sort of rule that has never been broken so far is that both the major parties, whether they put it, even if they have a parrot on a stick or even maybe even Liz Truss, they usually get more than 29%. You know, 29% of the vote is a sort of absolute bedrock. The Conservatives are actually polling slightly below that. What would actually happen at a general election isn't clear. But at the moment, they're heading for a complete wipeout. And what's incredible by historic standards is just how quickly they managed to do that.
A parrot on a stick. Okay, I'm stifling laughter, but actually I'm close to tears at the same time because you're right. No, it's pretty staggering stuff. So then what about, does the Conservative Party then look ridiculous if they try to ditch Liz Truss? So Simon Fraser from Chatham House was saying that they could simply look ridiculous. How is it possible for them to change leader? Can they at this point, etc.?
They look ridiculous anyway, so they may as well. I think they just have to try and pretend that they had a momentary bout of madness and that normal service has been resumed. So frankly, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. I think if the MPs are able to engineer something where they just produce a new candidate, there's a palace coup, Liz Truss goes, the new candidate arrives and it's done with, there will be lots of howls from their opponents about a general election. But assuming that the replacement is competent and a better communicator than Liz Truss, and to be quite honest, it can't be hard to be a better communicator than Liz Truss. On that basis, that's probably, if I was advising them, that's what I would be telling them to do. So yes, they're damned if they do. They'll have no moral, position for doing it. But frankly, it's better than limping on.
So that was Ben Page, the chief executive of Ipsos Mori, speaking to us earlier. I mean, you know, he was just didn't mince his words, really, about the difficulties that Liz Truss faces. And also now, of course, we've got a fourth Conservative MP publicly out saying that Liz Truss has got to go, that the situation is no longer tenable. Angela Richardson, who's the MP for Guildford, and that they look ridiculous already. And so, you know, perhaps there will be a change of leadership.
Ben Page wins our a metaphor bingo with parrot on a stick for today. Let's get back to our markets reporter, Valerie Tytel, who's very patiently stayed with us in studio through all of this. Valerie, where do we go from here? We have the relief rally on the markets now. What happens next in terms of what markets are watching for?
Yeah, so one of the things I want to echo that Jeremy Hunt said, he said, I quote, governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets, but they can play their part. Now it's over to the Bank of England to play their part in guiding the markets on what their reaction function to the last few days is going to be. That being said, we do have Wednesday's inflation print coming, where Bloomberg survey median is now 10.1%, so way into double digits there. So there's still some questions on how that data evolves, but it's over to Governor Bailey to guide the markets into the November 2nd decision the best he can. He threw us for some loops back in last year, if you guys remember. It was the November meeting
meeting where he said he was going to act aggressively and ended up not hiking. So I would hope that he is going to give the market some calm and guide them to, as to his decision in November.
Yeah, and we have seen the bets for rate hikes being scaled back throughout the morning. Now the bet for the Bank of England now market saying 100 basis points looking likely at the next meeting on the 3rd of November. Of course, before all of that, we will have more from the Chancellor at 3:30 this afternoon as he speaks to the House of Commons and gives details of more details on the statement that he's released this morning. But as he said, given the market sensitivity, he had decided in coordination with the Leader of the House that they would be speaking before that to the markets.
Yeah, of course. We've got the cable this afternoon with Guy Johnson, but we'll be back live tomorrow morning with Daybreak Europe and UK Politics at 12 noon with that full interview with the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. Let's see what happens between now and then. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.